You are listening to WXRWLP Milwaukee, 104.1 FM and RiverWestRadio.com globally. I'm your host, NTSC. Welcome to The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom. The Anti is anti-authoritarian, anti-capitalist, anti-hierarchy, anti-sexist, anti-racist, anti-fascist, and more. If we are against so much, what do we stand for? The ideals of freedom. In this series, we explore what a free society would look like while recognizing that none of us today are truly free. Having said all that, even though the device on which you are listening right now likely was not free, the radio waves you are listening to are. However, WXRW costs money to operate. To that end, you can always visit the station at 824 East Center Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and purchase a hat or a mug or a t-shirt, and all of those proceeds will go directly to supporting the station. Or if you like any of the programming on WXRW, please reach out and become an official underwriter. Every little bit helps. And now you can also dial into River West Radio on your smart speaker of choice. Just tell your listening device at home to play WXRW River West Radio. We're on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So this episode has been a long time coming. The show, The Anti, is against a lot of things, as explained in the little intro that I do every week. I call the show a primer on freedom, and I think that's fairly accurate. But the show may as well be called a primer on anarchism, because that's essentially what it is when it boiled down to its core values. Freedom means a lot of things to a lot of people, depending on who you're talking to. If you're talking about freedom in the typical political landscape of two-party America, the odds are good you're a right-wing neoliberal pundit, a politician, or just generally a conservative, because they sure do talk about freedom quite a lot. What do they mean when they talk about freedom? Well, they mean freedom from the oversight of the state. Neoliberals, and don't forget that that means Republicans and Democrats alike, as we discussed in our earlier episode about neoliberalism, but neoliberals want freedom from laws and regulation, but primarily only for businesses, corporations, and companies. They don't actually want personal freedom to become accessible to all. They want that very much sheltered away behind a paywall, as it usually is. And if you don't believe freedom in this neoliberal system is locked behind a paywall, you need look no further than the truly vulturous practice of money bail to realize the truth of the matter. Money bail's kind of been on people's lips lately, and there's a really great example of it from recent news. Harvey Weinstein just paid his $1 million bail as if it were absolutely nothing, only to have the exact same court hear a marijuana possession case wherein the plaintiff couldn't pay his fine of $195. So that man is in jail and Harvey Weinstein is free. That is the freedom paywall. And obviously, beyond the justice system, it's far more insidious than even that. When a neoliberal talks about freedom, they are not talking about freedom from hunger or freedom from fear or freedom from homelessness or any of that. The dialogue has been so skewed in favor of what I would deem empty, pointless freedoms that have no real meaning in the larger context of our socio-political ecosystem. The Bill of Rights is a joke, you know, that does not address even the most fundamental needs of a person. So The Anti is a primer on freedom, and thus is a primer on anarchism, because anarchism is the only philosophy that focuses on real freedom as its core tenet. Freedom of speech and freedom of worship and freedom of the press and the right to bear arms and the right to vote and all of those lofty things most Americans think are their freedoms are all really, in essence, empty, shallow platitudes capitulated temporarily by the state. I say temporarily because those things are contingent on your cooperation with the state, its rule of law, and its principles. And if you cross the line, all of those freedoms can be taken away, or at least disenfranchised, or very much limited by the state. Anarchism posits that we are not meant to live like that. To talk about it with any real clarity, we should start with the basics. I'm going to proceed with the expectation that my current audience doesn't really know what anarchism is. If you do, I hope you like the show, comrade. If you don't, I'll do my best to get this right, because as with all things, anarchism is really up to a lot of different interpretations. This show is about mine, at least my personal interpretation of what the tenets of anarchism are. Anarchists are back in the news lately, thanks to the terrible and awful return of militant fascism, like we talked about a few episodes ago, white supremacy, and other plagues on society. So what is anarchism? If you recall from last week's episode, that whole archism suffix refers to the Greek word for leadership, archos. I didn't look it up last week. I did y'all a favor and I looked it up this week. So monarchy is the rule of one person, monoarchy, right? Oligarchy is the rule of a few people, a very few people. So anarchy is a state in which nobody rules. No person has power over any other person. It is classless, stateless, and completely without hierarchy by its very nature. Nobody has any power or right to tell anyone else what to do. That, in a very basic and simplistic sense, is what anarchism is. It is not analogous to chaos, just as hierarchy is not analogous to order. And on that point, I would posit that our current hierarchical oligarchies and this plutocracy that we're all in has created a very equal, disordered, dysfunctional world. And I'll have to continue to make that argument as this series progresses. So if anarchism is a system without rulers, how does it function? I'm probably going to have to draw a great deal from some of my favorite anarchist authors and thinkers in this episode and really all the other episodes. But if you want to read them yourselves, I highly recommend the works of Petr Kropotkin, Emma Goldman, Ursula K. Le Guin, and Mikhail Bakunin. The two Russians I mentioned, Kropotkin and Bakunin, are from a long time ago. So some of their work has real problems when it comes to intersectional struggle and identity politics. So just be forewarned. They're not some perfectly enlightened authorities. And really quite the opposite. You know, anarchism does a really good job of warning that succumbing to hero worship is a really quick way to be disappointed. Anyway, what are the nuts and bolts of anarchism? Well, if I could boil it down to three primary pillars, they would be these. Number one, free association. Number two, mutual aid. And number three, solidarity. So we'll start with pillar one, free association. Free association means that you can freely associate with whomever you desire. It means that there is no hierarchical structure between you or anyone else. It means that there can be no barrier between people, such as private ownership, because a thing owned by one is inaccessible to all others. That's where the term property is theft comes into play. You may have heard that. That is to say, free association recognizes that ownership of a thing is not what's really important, but access to the things that we want and need is important. Why would you need to own a car if you can freely get from point A to point B through shared free communal transit or by using shared freely available personal vehicles. Why own a tool if all tools are freely available for use? If you could just go down to a repository and get literally anything you need and then just put it back when you're done. That's free association. It's far less wasteful. It's extremely equitable and it's much greener than private ownership could ever be. Free association also means at its core a moneyless society, since access to everything is freely afforded to all. Money only exists as a barrier to entry, as a barrier to access. It creates inherently skewed power structures, and it also just motivates and rewards the worst, most competitive, destructive tendencies. Free association, on the opposite end of the spectrum, rewards cooperation to the mutual benefit of all, helping yourself. You know, improving your personal lot in life equates to helping everyone. And that actually leads very nicely into the second pillar, mutual aid. Right now, when you give a gift to someone, a friend or a family member, there's a strange transactional guilt that gets attached to it. Everything in this overly commodified society becomes part of a transaction. It sneaks into every corner of our lives, sadly, including our relationships and even our romances, which is one of the ways to grow toxic masculinity, by the way. You know, when a man feels he is owed the body of a woman because he has entered into a transaction with her, be it a transaction of attention or gifts or something along those lines, you know, he feels he has a right to her. And that is something that anarchism would never abide. Mutual aid means the free exchange of ideas and goods between people based on a voluntary and equal relationship. So there's no guilt involved with taking or giving. And equally, there's no moral, righteous superiority to be gained through, you know, quote unquote, charity, because charity doesn't exist in an anarchism. I help you because it is in my social nature to do so. And in so doing, I am equally helped. And that's really it. The realization that I do not end where my body ends, but that you and I are an extension of all the world. Helping someone a million miles away still helps me because it improves the whole world on which I live. And some would say that's taking it a bit far, further at least than most anarchists are willing to take it kind of metaphysically. But I personally don't think that's wrong. At least personally for me, that makes a lot of sense. Competition works in exactly the opposite way that mutual aid does. Competition, as touted by, market capitalists, engenders cruelty, hatred, a me versus you attitude in a zero-sum game. It's not a zero-sum game. Your detriment is my gain in a competition. You know, your loss is my win. And it's a terribly vicious system. And it's also completely counter to our sociable nature. All this stuff might seem really super lovey-dovey, you know, to the cynics listening. You know, helping someone a million miles away helps me. Rest assured, anarchists do not believe human nature is good or moral inherently. Anarchists know that human nature is sociable. I'll give you a real easy example. Look at Facebook and other social networks. We all know that they're stealing our data and commodifying us, you know, to the nth degree. Why do we keep using them? Because they are an essential social tool, and we are sociable beings. Our sociability and mutual aid all go hand in hand. Kropotkin has a great quote in his book, The Conquest of Bread, which if you haven't read it, I highly recommend you do. The quote is, those who man the lifeboat do not ask credentials from the crew of a sinking ship. And that's all just to say, when we are faced with suffering, it is our reaction to help. And I can hear the cynics chiming in right now and pointing their finger in the air and shaking their heads. Don't worry, cynics, we'll get to you later. Maybe not in this episode. But suffice it to say, we are sociable creatures. And mutual aid is a natural evolutionary trait of all humans. If you're just joining us, you are listening to WXRW River West Radio, 104.1 FM. And this is The Anti, a weekly primer on freedom, and I'm your host, NTSC. This week, we're talking about anarchism. It's an episode that's been a long time coming. We're talking about the basic and fundamental pillars of anarchism. They are free association, mutual aid, and we're just now moving on to the third pillar, solidarity. The simple usage of solidarity just means people who are joined together by a common cause. It's a very real effect that can be felt really in any mass community. Large concerts or shows for a band you love, you know, put yourself there. You're in front of the stage. You don't know the person next to you from Adam's Off Ox, but they know the words to all the songs that you know all the words to. You know, they've followed this band for maybe as long as you, or maybe longer. There's an energy felt between people who are unified in a cause or a goal or a belief. Here's a really good example that has only helped to strengthen my belief in anarchism. I volunteer pretty regularly at a food bank. Solidarity is extremely evident when you and a group of, say, 20 to 30 strangers are all working together, laboring in the name of and towards the benefit of people whom you will never, ever meet. And I have never seen people work so well and so happily and so efficiently and with such camaraderie as in those circumstances. And it's always voluntary, and it's always in solidarity with a shared cause. And it also, I'll mention here that the specific food bank for which I volunteer kind of functions extremely non-hierarchically. There's usually maybe one person from the organization itself, and then the rest are all just volunteers. And you're never told explicitly the right or wrong way to do something. You figure it out, you know, in cooperation with these 20 to 30 strangers. And no one tells you, you know, fundamentally what to do. You all figure it out together. And it happens very, very quickly. And the systems that you find yourself adopting get improved. And I posit perfected very, very quickly. You learn what works and what doesn't, all without somebody having given you a single instruction other than, this is what needs to get done. Let's achieve that goal. That is such a brilliant example of non-hierarchical solidarity. So really, anarchism seeks to remove unnatural barriers to happiness. And to reinforce the better natures of our human spirit, all by simply championing one core value, freedom.
I'm just going to read you a passage. I wrote two utopias. One of them is overtly anarchist, that's The Dispossessed. It's the first, and so far as I know, the only anarchist utopia. This comes actually quite late in the book, and it's the part in the book where he most clearly perceives what he's been doing. If you don't know the book, he's a physicist who's grown up in this anarchist world where things were not going altogether well, and people were beginning to act really kind of like capitalists and things. So he goes to the neighboring world, the sort of parent world, and things aren't going too well there either, and he gets into the revolution. So the poor guy's been kind of tossed back and forth between the ideals of his society and the realities of human nature and stuff. So here he is towards the end of the book with his wife, Takfer. Long after Takfer had fallen asleep that night, he lay awake, his hands under his head, looking into darkness, hearing silence. He thought of his long trip out of the dust, remembering the levels and mirages of the desert, the train driver with the bold brown head and candid eyes who had said that one must work with the time and not against it. Shevik had learned something about his own will these last 4 years. In its frustration, he had learned its strength. No social or ethical imperative equaled it. Not even hunger could repress it. The less he had, the more absolute became his need to be. He recognized that need in Odonian terms as his cellular function, the analogic term for the individual's individuality, the work he can do best, therefore his best contribution to his society. A healthy society would let him exercise that optimum function freely, in the coordination of all such functions, finding its adaptability and strength. That was a central idea of Odo's analogy. This kind of founding book of his culture. That the Odonian society on Anaris had fallen short of the ideal didn't, in his eyes, lessen his responsibility to it. Just the contrary. With the myth of the state out of the way, the real mutuality and reciprocity of society and individual became clear. Sacrifice might be demanded of the individual, but never compromise. For though only the society could give security and stability, only the individual, the person, had the power of moral choice. The power of change, the essential function of life. That the Odonian society was conceived as a permanent revolution, and revolution begins in the thinking mind. All this Shevik had thought out in these terms, for his conscience was a completely Odonian one. He was therefore certain by now that his radical and unqualified will to create was, in Odonian terms, its own justification. His sense of primary responsibility towards his work did not cut him off from his fellows, from his society, as he thought. It engaged him with them absolutely. Footnote here. I'm talking about a scientist, a physicist, but of course I'm also talking about artists or anybody with a job to do that they know is their job. That was nice. He also felt that a man who had this sense of responsibility about one thing was obliged to carry it through in all things. It was a mistake to see himself as its vehicle and nothing else, to sacrifice any other obligation to it. That sacrificiality was what Takfer had spoken of, recognizing in herself when she was pregnant. She'd spoken with a degree of horror, of self-disgust, because she too was an Odonian, and the separation of means and ends was to her too false. For her, as for him, there was no end. There was process. Process was all. You could go in a promising direction, or you could go wrong. But you didn't set out with the expectation of ever stopping anywhere. All responsibilities, all commitments thus understood, took on substance and duration. So his mutual commitment with Topfair, their relationship, had remained thoroughly alive during their 4 years separation. They had both suffered from it and suffered a good deal, but it had not occurred to either of them to escape the suffering by denying the commitment. For, after all, he thought now, lying in the warmth of Tocqueville's sleep, it was joy they were both after, the completeness of being. If you evade suffering, you also evade the chance of joy. Pleasure you may get, or pleasures, but you will not be fulfilled. You will not know what it is to come home.
That was a piece from a larger talk by my favorite author of all time, Ursula K. Le Guin, who wrote probably all my favorite books, basically. She passed away earlier this year, and it really broke me up inside. There are a lot of really great quotes and excerpts from all sorts of anarchist thinkers, but for this episode, I really wanted to include as much of that reading as I could, because I think it speaks to the larger goal, the truer aspiration of anarchism. And there's a lot of really great little moments in that book, some of which would have made a better, they maybe would have made a better presentation for her, you know, just in as much as they're great propaganda and stuff. But that was that section talks more about the realization of the anarchist spirit, the spirit of freedom as realized and, you know, recognized in the soul of a person. Anyway, I highly recommend the novel from which she was reading, The Dispossessed. It's really some of the best science fiction ever written, and it was my gateway to anarchism. So I've decided pretty late in the game here that this is just episode part one in what has to be a larger series specifically about anarchism. I think we did a decent job of looking at the basics of it all. So next time we'll have to delve into specifics, maybe some examples from history, maybe take some more pieces from, you know, the people who are considered to kind of be the conceptual architects of anarchism, and we'll go into the frequently asked questions, you know, for all of our cynics out there. Thank you so much for tuning into The Anti here on WXRW River West Radio. I have been your host, NTSC, and I'll be back again next week at the same time to discuss further topics as they relate to freedom, anarchism, and our awesome shared potential. Past episodes can be found at creamcitymedia.com/anti, and more information about the show can be found at riverwestradio.com. Thanks a lot.